Welcome to the first ever Rebuildable podcast. I'm Matt Gentile, and I'll be taking you on this journey with me now and into the future. So what exactly is the Rebuildable podcast? Well, you can tell by the name, it's about the long-term efforts of the Chicago Bulls and this current iteration of the rebuild. I think every Bulls fan has a different opinion on how to make this team a contender. And I've noticed that, especially on Bulls Twitter. There's a lot of great podcasters, bloggers, and just Twitter personalities that all have interesting opinions on how to get this team back to being a contender. And I wanted to create a platform where they could lay out a full rebuilding plan from start to finish. And that would mean everything from, you know, the player development of the team to the organizational philosophy to, you know, coaching, GM, hires, to then roster decisions. So each episode, we're going to give that podcaster, blogger, personality a chance to do that. And we'll have some other podcasts, too, where we, you know, talk about some of the latest breaking news with the Bulls or any rumors and rumblings that make headlines. We'll definitely have some special podcasts for that. But mainly, this will be really about the rebuilding efforts of the Bulls and how this team can become a contender again. Because really, that's all we want, right? We haven't had a champion in over 20 years. And sometimes it's hard to believe that it's been that long. So actually, our first guest today is going to be Jordan Malley from the Locked On Bulls podcast. He's the host and producer of that podcast, and they put up regular content almost on a daily basis, and that can be difficult sometimes, but they do a great job over there. He co-hosts that with, of course, Matt Peck from Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. But before we get started, I want to just lay out some details on where you can find us. So we're on Twitter at rebuild_a_bull, B-U-L-L. And you'll be able to get the latest podcasts and, you know, we'll be retweeting any breaking news and any observations that we have on some of the latest stuff with the Bulls. You can also follow me on Twitter at mgentile88, and Gentile is spelled G-E-N-T-I-L-E. The podcast will be available on Spotify and iTunes coming soon. I should have some more information about that, hopefully, in the coming days. You can also find us on our website. The podcasts are there, rebuildable.com. It's all one word. So when I was looking for guests for this show, one of the names that popped in my head right off the bat was Jordan Malley from the Locked On Bulls podcast. They actually put out content almost on a daily basis, if not, you know, at least a couple times, a few times a week. And they always do such a great job of creating fresh content and new engaging material. And one of the things I like about Jordan is Jordan's very thorough. And I knew that this would be a topic that might pique his interest. And he definitely came with a fantastic plan that you're going to hear about in a little bit. But what I asked him first was what it's like to create a podcast almost on a daily basis like he does with Locked On Bulls. And here's what he had to say.
We are 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and we go anywhere between 30 and 60 minutes long. The episodes, as the season's kind of dragged on, it seems like Matt and I have gone longer as there has been less to talk about, which is kind of weird, but we always find things to talk about. So yeah, five episodes a week, Monday through Friday.
How tricky can it be to just consistently come up with engaging content on a daily basis?
It can be tough at times, and especially during a rebuild and with all the injuries that the Bulls have had. But lucky for us, this season has been so weird, and there's been so many different storylines with this Bulls team that it's given us enough to talk about. But if you look at the offseason, Matt and I did part of Locked On Bulls. We did five episodes a week starting in the offseason in April last year and running all the way through September to when the season kicked off again. You find different things to talk about. I mean, you can go into the Bulls history. You can go into things that people want to listen to, which is a lot surrounding around trade talks, free agency, and the NBA draft. And when you're putting out five episodes a week, you can kind of narrow it down to one or two prospects a day. So there's always things to talk about. And I think with Twitter and social media, it's kind of given us a chance to get an instant response from our audience and find out what they want to listen to on a daily basis.
And I think, like, with especially with the offseason now in the NBA, it definitely makes things interesting. So you can keep things going. And, you know, this offseason, I think, is going to be really interesting to create some stuff throughout the summer with, you know, the draft and, you know, the Bulls free agency plan.
Yeah, I think if you look back at even last year, you know, with the Bulls having two picks, it was kind of cool. You could focus on some of the top lottery picks that everybody had been talking about for 8 months or a year plus. But then the Bulls had that 22nd pick. So then we got a chance to look at the back end of the first round and some of those other prospects that maybe are more intriguing. And then you see kind of how deep that class was, too. So, yeah, finding a way to engage your listeners and kind of get them exposed to everything that the draft offers, and also to free agency. Like, even if there isn't somebody that is guaranteed to sign with the Bulls, or the Bulls might be remotely interested, there's always a way to find a conversation in there if using just a what if or a hypothetical conversation that might spark another conversation that you didn't think before. So, yeah, there's always content with the NBA.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask, with Matt Peck now on, you know, Bulls Outsiders, first off, has it gone to his head? And second, has that kind of helped your audience, you know, grow this season?
I think so. I think they've done an amazing job with Bulls Outsiders. You know, it's unfortunate how dysfunctional this team has been this year. And I think every Bulls podcast or anybody who's creating content for this team, covering it either on the internet or even if you talk to any of the beat writers, you know, it's difficult to cover a tanking team and try to keep the attention of people who want to watch basketball. Obviously, you're always going to have your NBA focused people and your people that are diehard Bulls fans, but it's attracting those other audiences, those fringe audiences, maybe the casual basketball fan. It's not going to pay any attention to a mid-November game when Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis and some of your main pieces are out of the game. Like, they'll tune in to watch Zach LaVine, but if you're getting your head pounded in by a Milwaukee team or a Pistons team by 30, people are going to tend to tune out. But they've done an amazing job with that Bulls Outsiders show. Shout out to Big Dave, John Sabine, and Matt Peck for the way that that show has developed in just one season. And I think if you watch it from now, it's been fantastic. But it has helped our show tremendously, and it's given us more to talk about, too. And I think it keeps both of us hyper aware of what we want to do with the podcast, and it continues our balance between our opinions too. So it's been nothing but great success for him and for our show.
Yeah, you know, their chemistry is fantastic. Actually, we're gonna have John Sabine on this in about a week from now, and really looking forward to talking with him. Or I was going to say that Matt actually, when I, you know, saw that, I, you know, followed him on Twitter, and that's how I actually got started on your podcast.
I think that's what's kind of cool, too, is the NBC and having Matt be on that show has kind of exposed Bulls fans that may not be in the podcasting lane yet, you know, mm-hmm. might still be listening to AM and FM radio, which there's nothing wrong with that. I still listen to ESPN 1000, 670 The Score daily basis. Mm-hmm. I still love sports radio, but there's people that, you know, in the times where it's baseball season, the NCAA, March Madness, all of this going on, there's no section for Bulls talk anymore. And right. So I think that's when people go to podcasting, and it's been fantastic. It's opened up a new section of Bulls fans to our podcast this season.
Well, and speaking of podcasts, this Rebuildable podcast, you're the first ever guest. So how does that make you feel?
I appreciate it. I think, I'm a little nervous now. I got to set my standards high, I guess, for the rest of the guests, right?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on is, you know, in listening to your podcast with Matt, is, you know, you're very nuanced. You're very thorough in the way that you approach things, and I just thought that this would just seem like a no-brainer type of setup with you kind of coming up with that long-term game plan for a rebuild. I thought this is somebody that I would definitely want to have on, and you know, you were one of the first ones to agree, so you're the inaugural one.
I appreciate that. So I hope my responses throughout this podcast seep through to some of our listeners and maybe set a standard, a pretty high standard. And if it sets a low bar, then that's good for your other guests, I guess.
There
too.
You go.
So, yeah.
There's always a positive to come out of it, I guess, right?
Exactly.
So just to kind of set the scene, I'm going to play the role of a, I guess, moderator here, but more like if I was Michael Reinsdorf for the Reinsdorf family chiming in. Don't be too afraid. I'm not going to, you know, tell you not to sign a pitcher to a 5-year contract. We're talking Bulls. I'm just going to really just throw out some questions to you as we go here. And, you know, I'll follow up along the way here. I'm going to set the scene here. I'm Michael Reinsdorf. I have sat John Paxson and Gar Forman down in the room and said, after 16 years, my dad and I think it's time for change. And for some reason, I'm Michael Reinsdorf, and I like to listen to a lot of fan podcasts. And I said, wow, this guy's pretty good. This Jordan Malley guy's got a lot of thoughts. And so I've hired you to be my new vice president of basketball operations. So what's the first order of business in your plan to rebuild the Bulls into a contender?
I think the first order of business, if we're talking about the end of this season, would be talking with Jim Boylan, saying, I think what he's done in the 4 or 5 months he's had to be head coach here has been difficult. It's a difficult situation to be thrown into. The injuries didn't help him. And I think some of the philosophies that he's had have been good for the team. It's set a bar and it's set a standard. And I think you see the players start to buy into that. But ultimately, I think I would start with a fresh course, and I would start by running a coaching search. So I think that would be the first order of business. Let fans know that rebuilds take time and that there are a lot of positive pieces. And I think I would start with building my brand of this new Bulls team and this new Bulls direction around the pieces that you already have on this team. And that includes Markkanen, Levine, and Carter. Those are guys that are going to be around for 2, 3, 4 years. And you hope even longer than that if the success and the rebuild is faster than that. So I think those are the two places I would start. I would start with a coaching search, find a new fresh mind to get in here and start this rebuild or continue this rebuild into year 3, which is crucial, and center the team around Markkanen, Levine, and Carter for the future.
So for your coach, what type of coach are you looking for to lead this team going forward?
Yeah, I think it's difficult right now to kind of pinpoint one person that I would really want to be the head coach of the Bulls. But I think a group, as far as the coaching search goes, I think it starts with a few of these names. Messina, Jay Wright would be another coach that I would interview. Monty Williams, Becky Hammond, Luke Walton, even I would give an interview to. Mm-hmm. Jerry Stackhouse was a guy that I thought would make a lot of sense, and I said that a few months ago in our podcast, but he took the job at Vanderbilt just recently, so he's kind of off the board. So I would do a thorough coaching search and talk to as many candidates as possible and figure out kind of who the best coach is, who's got the best background, and who can develop the three core pieces that you have, and then on top of that, your draft pick and where they want to go with the future of this team. So any of those candidates that I had named would be people that I would potentially like to hire as the next head coach.
You know, Monty Williams is an interesting name. You keep hearing that one brought up a lot. I think, you know, there's a good section of Bulls Twitter and Bulls fans that, you know, they've heard the name before. So it definitely resonates, and he definitely has a lot of cachet around the league. But do you think there's some concern there with, you know, the money that's being owed to Fred Hoiberg? Because I believe there's some offset. It wasn't as high as people thought. And you still have to pay Jim Boylan for another season. Do you think that could play a role in, you know, preventing a coach like a Monty Williams or somebody that might cost some money to get in here?
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Monty Williams, too, is some of the weaknesses that maybe he has as a coach. You know, you look at the situation he was in with the Pelicans. Mm. He only made the playoffs, what was it, 1 year? He had Anthony Davis at the start. They developed a pretty decent relationship, but I don't think he got the best out of Jrue Holiday when they made that trade. Look, the Pelicans front office didn't really help him out either, I don't think, with some of the draft picks that they took. They had 2 picks, and one was which they took in the lottery. That was Austin Rivers. There was just some moves that Pelicans team made that I don't think helped accelerate that rebuild the way that the Pelicans wanted it to. So not everything's on Monty Williams, but I think there's potential to give him a second chance. So I would just look at some of that. I would look at what he did with the rebuild with the Pelicans, just having a superstar like Anthony Davis and even having a borderline all-star, a really good player in Jrue Holiday, and still not getting the best out of what you would have thought between all of those players. So there are some weaknesses, but maybe he can turn things around with better and younger pieces here with the Bulls and more plethora outside of just one star in Anthony Davis.
Do you think, though, that there would be the financial concern potentially with the way the Reinsdorfs operate with, you know, paying multiple coaches at once? Because, again, Hoiberg is going to be owed some money, it looks like, and you do have $1.5 million to Jim Boylan. Do you think that could be a concern with a guy like Monty Williams if that was your guy?
I don't think so. I don't think it should be a concern. It doesn't take a hit against your cap. So if that's part of it, I mean, the Bulls are one of the richest franchises in all of professional sports. They're one of the biggest global brands ever. They invest money outside of just what their payroll is. And, you know, people kill them for that and some of the moves that they've made recently. But if you really, truly love a guy as a head coach and you want him to be here, spend all the money you can to bring him in, right? I think that's a no-brainer at this point. So you're getting $2.5 million back from what you owe Fred Hoiberg next season, and you'll only owe Jim Boylan a guaranteed of the $1 million out of the $1.5. So really, you're only owing $3.5 million out of what you thought could have been somewhere around $6 million this year. So right. You reduce that in half. So I say just if you find a guy or if you find a coach, throw as much money as you can at them and make sure they don't get away if you really love them.
And I agree with you, because if it's somebody that you think can really set the tone for your organization, basically with player relations, I think you have to have a home run hire, especially with the perception around the league with the Bulls. If it's somebody that you think can repair that, I agree, you have to go for it. For your front office, though, you know, and you set the tone with a coach, or you're looking to find that guy, but within your front office, what other moves are you looking to make? Like, are there names that you'd want to add to your staff as a GM, making moves in the scouting department? What are some of the things that you would do right off the bat?
Yeah, I think is looking for a new general manager would be a start. A few names that I have, and this list could extend, and it obviously varies between. There's also a lot of other jobs open for GM spots. The Suns are looking for a new GM. The Pelicans are looking for a new GM. So you're going to be fighting with other teams, and it's kind of time sensitive here. I think an absolute long shot, and I don't think this guy will leave where he is currently. But an absolute long shot, if you want to take a three-quarters court shot at this guy, it's Mike Zarin, the assistant GM of the Celtics. Look, every team around the NBA wants him. I don't think he's leaving the Celtics, though. But there are a few minor connections he has to Chicago. I think he would make perfect sense for a rebuild like this. So maybe you can convince him, but you would have to throw a ton of money at him to convince him to leave that Celtics team where he grew up, watched, was a season ticket holder. So there's a lot of factors with him. I think Troy Weaver, vice president, assistant GM of the Thunder, who's been there for a very long time, worked under Sam Presti. I think he's a very smart mind. You see with the way that Thunder team has kind of constructed itself and then had to reconstruct itself after Kevin Durant leaves, after James Harden leaves. So I think he would be a great candidate as well. Then Trahan Langdon, the assistant GM of the Nets. He's a Duke guy, former player. Big part of their Nets rebuild and big part of their success this year in the last couple of years building that up. And he's part of the Greg Popovich coaching school. So all good things from him too. So those are three guys that I would look at to hire as my next GM.
That last name, it makes me feel old, because I do remember when he played at Duke. Like, actually, I remember watching him play at Duke, and it's crazy. Now, these guys that are like, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s are now, you know, part of front offices and coaching staffs. That's when you know you're getting old. So when you do kind of get that set up, if you do find your GM in place, one of the biggest beefs that you read about with the Chicago Bulls is that they have an understaffed scouting department. Is this something that you would try and concentrate more of your effort on? You know, maybe if it's in the international area, college, what are some things you might be doing to shake that up?
I think the scouting department too gets criticized a little bit because of the analytics department. And look, the Bulls have tried to make a concerted effort to open that up a little bit more in the last couple of years. But if I'm hired and I'm reconstructing this rebuild, I'm opening it up. I'm opening it wide open. And okay. I'm taking a look at some of those other teams around the league that have done this and had some success. I mean, the Warriors are one of those teams. You look around the league and the way that analytics are playing a huge part of basketball today. I think you have to hire as many smart people in your analytics department as you do have scouts. So for every person that you have in your scouting department, I think you should at least have one person in your analytics department. So that would be my main focus. And as far as the scouting department, Ivaka Dukin, I think, does a great job internationally. I think he's recognized as one of the best international scouts, so we'll keep him on. I think that the scouting department has done a good job overall. I think it's more about the GM and the vice president and some of the upper management taking the advice of those scouts and who they really feel is a fit for this team, whether it's free agents or in the draft. So you look at the history of the Bulls draft over the last 10 years, I think there's more hits. And even if you go back 15 years, I think there's more hits than there are misses. So I would keep the scouting department relatively the same, maybe add a few pieces here and there, but really focus on that analytics department.
Another area that I think kind of falls under the purview of the front office is the sports medicine and medical staff. And that's another area that gets a lot of criticism, a lot of scrutiny. And, you know, there's been a history of injuries with the Bulls, and you can't overlook that. Is there anything that you're doing there to shake that part of your organization up to?
Yeah, I think I would take the advice of the new coaching staff that I would bring in. I would take the advice of the new GM that I'm bringing in, as well as get some advice from people who've been around the organization for a long time. If I'm just stepping into this role, assuming that I have some knowledge of what the team has done, but I don't have a ton of knowledge, I would say I would talk to everybody from the training staff to the medical staff, see what's going on, if we need to reevaluate things, if we need to go in a new direction as far as the way that we approach players and the way that they're hurt, how they're coming back, how they're recovering, then you do that. But I think you get the advice from as many people as possible, and then you go from there. So I think those would be minor moves at this point. I think the focus would be more so on everything else in between, and kind of leave that up to my GM and talking to the coaching staff that he hires and what they think.
Now, once you have your front office and everything, you know, set upstairs, and the draft lottery rolls around, when you start looking then at your roster, let's say you actually win the lottery, you get the number one pick. Is it fair to say you're taking Zion Williamson? Like, do I have to ask? Really?
Yeah, that's not even a question.
Okay.
I don't think anybody should question Zion Williamson as being the number one pick in this draft.
Have you seen some of the, like, I saw a take on Bulls Twitter. It can be a dangerous rabbit hole to go down. I get it. But there was actually a couple of threads that I saw going around when one of the tankathon results had the Atlanta Hawks cashing in on that, getting that extra pick. And I think they, in the tankathon results, had like the third and the sixth pick or something like that. I'm trying to remember exactly how it fell.
Yeah, if they could keep their own pick, they'll keep their own pick in the top three, and then that Dallas pick falls out of the top five, then they'll be able to retain that. So if it's 6 through 14, they'll be able to, or 6 through whatever it is, they'll be able to get that Dallas pick. But if it falls in the top five, then they won't retain that this year.
Right. So it was the fact that the Hawks had two picks, and somebody replied to that. I think it was the Bulls had won the lottery in that tankathon suggestion, and it was the Hawks trading their two picks to the Bulls for that number one pick. And everybody underneath that reply was just talking about, oh, that's a smart move. You can get John Morant and you can get another player. I get that. It's great to glom up assets, but to me, this is a once in a lifetime player. This is a generational talent. Like, there would be no trade to make unless it was an established superstar. I would maybe consider that move.
I totally agree with that. And if you're talking about moving down from 1 to 3 and 6, you don't know who's picking at 2. Is Phoenix picking at 2? Is Cleveland picking at 2? Did one of those other teams move up, and are they picking at 2? And will they snag John Morant before you can take him at 3? Then you're stuck. Then are you taking a wing at 3 and then gambling on one of the point guards, the secondary point guards, Coby White or Darius Garland? So I think you're spot on with the way that you kind of set this up and said, if you're going to trade that number one pick in Zion Williamson, you better get an established star. You better get an Anthony Davis type of player. You better get somebody that's coming here on a long-term deal, young enough, established star right away. You know what you're getting, because you're trading away a potential generational type of talent, a talent that could be around the league for 20 years. And we've never seen a college player do the things that Zion Williamson has done. So you've got to be very smart if you're going to move out of that number one spot.
So that was actually going to be my follow-up question. So now that you're the vice president of basketball operations, let's say you get a call from the New Orleans Pelicans and they say, hey, we're willing to talk trade with you in a package that we get the number one pick, maybe a player to match salary, whether that's probably Otto Porter would be a guy that right off the bat you could use to match salary. And one of your other young players. Let's say for this hypothetical, it's Wendell Carter Jr. They want the number one pick, but you get Anthony Davis and you get a little bit of a window to talk with them and see if you can negotiate a long-term extension or see if there's any interest in signing a long-term extension. If he says no, would you consider doing that trade?
No, not a chance. I think this is very interesting. Sitting there taking a gamble and listening to kind of some of the other smart people around basketball talk, you have to offer your best stuff when it comes to trading for Anthony Davis. And I Right. get that the number one pick in Zion Williamson is part of your best stuff. That's probably your best, if not your best asset, it's 1B behind Markkanen. Markkanen's your best asset right now, I think, in terms of trade chips. So are you willing to give up Markkanen and Zion Williamson and probably one other piece, whether that's a future first round pick, whether that's Chris Dunn, or maybe even having to trade Wendell Carter Jr. for Anthony Davis, who's not even going to sign an extension? You're going to have to gamble on that. I'm not doing that. But if we're talking about Anthony Davis is willing to sign on the dotted line, 5-year max extension, I'm in. Okay. We can have that conversation then.
So this is my follow-up to you is, if he did say yes, would you be willing then? It sounds like you'd be willing to part with, you know, even if it's Lauri Markkanen is like the big, you know, name piece in that, and, you know, Porter's just there as a salary dump, you'd still be willing to make that deal?
I don't think it even would take Lauri Markkanen at that point. I think Zion Williamson is enough of a bait where you can say, okay, Zion Williamson and move Wendell Carter Jr., or is Zion Williamson and Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. Are you willing to do that and build up your front court behind Lauri Markkanen and Anthony Davis? Are you comfortable with that and keeping Otto Porter Jr. here, or mixing and matching Otto Porter Jr. and Wendell Carter Jr. and your number one overall pick? I think that can get it done. I don't think you need to match your first pick and Lauri Markkanen to get Anthony Davis. I just don't think it, and I don't think that would be – to me, I don't know if that's worth it. I don't know. I'm passing up on Zion in that potential.
Well, and you know, and I also agree with you. Like, in my opinion, you shouldn't be making a move. Like, you should be trying to make any move you can to add to your core. And so, like, to me, Lauri Markkanen is a firm part of that core. So, like, if you can make a move without having to shed him, I mean, you know, try and do that. And I honestly think that the way that the market's going to shape up, it might not be that difficult. And I think you're right. Just having the number one overall pick and having a generational talent like Zion might be enough where it's really just about matching salary at that point.
I think so too. And you also think about the other teams that might want to trade for Davis this summer and what they can offer. Will the Celtics, if the Bulls do get the number one pick, would the Celtics then, are they desperate enough to want Anthony Davis that they would start to talk about Jason Tatum in a trade?
Right.
On top of their other young pieces and the four picks that they're going to have in this draft. Look at the Lakers again. Is the number one pick Wendell Carter Jr. and maybe Otto Porter Jr. better than Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and some of the other pieces the Lakers would offer? You start to kind of mix and match that and see what your offer is. But I would be very reluctant on Lauri Markkanen because I'm very high on his skill set and what he can be in this league. So I'd be very reluctant to trade him away.
So let's say you don't win the lottery and the pick's somewhere at number two or number three. I mean, who are some players that you'd be looking at? I think, you know, John Morant's the one that you constantly hear, but what are some other players that you might consider in that 2-3 spot?
I think the 2-3 spot's interesting too. I'm pretty sure John Morant's the guy. I mean, it's a clear you need a point guard. He's arguably the second best prospect in this draft. I mean, some people want to argue him and Jarrett Culver is 2 and 3. I still think, as far as potential and ceiling, I think John Morant's got it. So I would draft him at 2. If we're talking about 3, though, I think Jarrett Culver's interesting. I think RJ Barrett's pretty interesting, but Jarrett Culver's stock, I think, has risen through this NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
All of those guys seem pretty interesting to me at 3. I don't think you can go wrong with any of these wings. I think they all have somewhat similar ceilings at this point. It's a matter of how they fit with your team and which guy. In terms of me, if you're keeping Zach LaVine around at 3, I want a more defensive style wing than maybe a guy that can't play a whole lot of defense or is going to need improvement in that area. And that makes me a little bit more concerned about RJ Barrett, maybe over Jarrett Culver.
So if you end up in that 4 to 7 range, which is of course the most likely range that you're probably going to be in, you know, what are some players you're looking at there? And would you maybe even consider using that area to try to move up into the top 3 by parting with an asset to get a player like Ja Morant?
Yeah, I think that's another really interesting question. It depends on the team too. Like if Phoenix is there at 2, mm-hmm. If the Knicks are there at 2, they're probably going to keep their picks and take Ja Morant and figure it out later. But then you talk about some other teams. Like if Atlanta bumps all the way up to 2 and they get that pick, they don't need another point guard. So they could talk about moving down. So you could maybe move up. They need a wing desperately. So maybe Otto Porter Jr. is somebody that they would want to bring in and help elevate them to the next level. You know, I know that the contract is massive and that would be difficult to kind of figure out with an Atlanta Hawks team who's got a ton of money to spend this summer. But that seems like a guy that could fit into that role pretty perfectly for them. And they're also looking for a wing in this draft. So maybe you could potentially move up to number 2, finding a deal with them. Maybe Cleveland gets the number 2 pick. Are they going to take Ja Morant? And maybe you talk to them about Colin Sexton and you don't have to give up a ton of assets and you can take a gamble on him. I know the Bulls management was high on him too last year, even in the draft. So there's some options I think you have. I think if you're at 4, though, I would seriously consider potentially moving down. You think about all the players that are available there and maybe trying to strike up a deal if Atlanta ends up at 5 and 9 with their Dallas and their own pick. Maybe they're looking to move up and get the top wing in this draft outside of Zion and then outside of Ja Morant. So I think there's interesting moves at 4, 5, 6, and 7 that you can make. And ultimately, if you just stand pat and take one of those prospects, I'm okay with that too.
Would you consider at that 4 and 7 range, if you were to trade down, would you consider trying to make a deal where you know you can get a future pick so that you can maybe glom up some assets for, you know, whenever that next move comes?
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing would be looking at next year's draft class too and seeing how high that is. And also the team that you're making the deal with, where are they going to be in a year and what are the protections going to be on that pick if you do trade for something like that? It gets very interesting, and maybe even a switch of picks you could do in the future, depending on what you think the Bulls are going to be next year. Some people think they're going to be a playoff team. They won't even be in the lottery. If that's true and the Bulls are healthy, then you're looking at a mid first round pick with their pick. So maybe you can do a flip flop if a team's looking to move up and you're looking to move down this year. You could potentially reward yourself with a playoff team next year and also a lottery pick. That could be a deal that could be made. I think it's very interesting, though. The Boston Celtics have 2 picks at the back end of this lottery, and if you fall all the way to something around 6 or 7, do you think that there's guys at 9 and 14 where they might end up that you could potentially find just as high of ceilings as the guy that you're going to take at 6 or 7? Maybe. So I think I would definitely have conversations about that with a bunch of different teams to see where they land and how much it would cost you to move up or down.
Once the draft is finished, you know, there's a couple players on your roster that you're going to have to make some decisions on. I think you kind of set the tone already that your core is LaVine, Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. I'm curious, though, about some of those other fringe pieces. And those are guys like the Chris Dunns, Denzel Valentine, Shaq Harrison, Wayne Selden. Robin Lopez is going to be a free agent. There's a lot of people have varying opinions on him. With some of those players, what are you looking at in terms of them? Are there guys that you want to keep around? Are there guys you're looking to shop or let go?
Yeah, I think as far as the point guard position goes, you look at You get decision on Ryan Arcidiacono, Shaq Harrison, and Chris Dunn this season. Chris Dunn's on the roster till next year. He's guaranteed contract, but still, I think you've got some concerns about if you don't get Ja Morant in the draft, are you going to target an in-betweener in free agency until you can figure out what you want to do there? I would find out which guy I want between Ryan Arcidiacono and Shaq Harrison and sign one of those guys this season. I think they've both proven enough to be a very good reserve guard, a potentially two or three type of player. As far as the other roster goes, I think Wayne Seldon has done a good job here, but you have a clog at that position, right? But between the shooting guard and the small forward, you're going to have Chandler Hutchison, Otto Porter Jr., a potential pick in the lottery that could be a wing player. You got Denzel Valentine coming back. So where's the real room that Wayne Seldon's going to have to be able to play actual minutes and contribute next year? I don't really see it. So maybe he's got other potentials outside of the Bulls that would give him more playing time in a rotation spot. So I think he's a good player. I just don't see him sticking around and getting the rotation minutes that he would want and contributing the way that we would want him to. As far as the center position goes, I would love to have Robin Lopez back to mentor Wendell Carter Jr. and continue to be the leader on this team. I think he's been quietly one of the best veterans for this team. But the play that he's had over the last two or three months, I think, has priced himself pretty much out of Bulls contention unless he's willing to take a pay cut to just come back and guarantee 20 to 25 minutes a night in that second unit. So if you don't re-sign him, which I would love to have him back, but it's got to be at a certain price point. You can't overpay for a backup center at this point. So that's kind of where I'm looking at as far as fringe guys on this roster this season. And then if we want to touch on Chris Dunn and Denzel Valentine, I think those guys you should be shopping immediately this summer to see what kind of deals you can package up. And if you can't get anything that's worthwhile for either one of those guys, then you hold on to them and hope that they can build up their trade value next season and see what they can get you maybe at the deadline.
What do you think Chris Dunn could fetch you in a trade? If like where his stock is right now? Could you potentially get, you know, a heavily protected first, or are we talking like 2 seconds?
I think right now it's probably 2 seconds and maybe just this. Yeah, I think it's probably 2 seconds. I mean, it depends too. It depends on where he would go. I think the fit and the injuries and the inconsistent playing time over these last 2 years has really hurt Chris Dunn. And I think to the system that Jim Boylan's kind of put in place after he came back from his injury, and also seeing the multi-ball handler system with Lowry and Zach kind of hurt him too. He's a ball dominant guard, and in order to score, he needs the ball in his hands. And he's tried to improve his three-point shot, which I think has been underrated this season too by Bulls fans. They're not realizing that he's actually part of the reason why his field goal percentage down is and his effective field goal percentage isn't nearly as high. He's taking a lot of threes. He's trying to improve that part of his game. So finishing around the rim's part of the weakness, but I still think he's a great defensive player. And I think once he gets right and healthy, builds that confidence back up, I think people are going to be surprised. I'm very surprised that people are just completely out on Chris Dunn. So I think there's other teams around the league that'd be willing to take a shot on him, but he's at a super low sell right now.
Denzel Valentine, that's another one. Is there any real value there when you go to shop him?
I think so. I mean, for a guy that shot, what, 38% from three on a really good sample size last year, coming off the bench was a spark. And, you know, people want to grill him for his defense. His defense wasn't that bad last year. And the team that he was playing around wasn't all that great either. So I think he can be a contributor. The main issue with him is about staying healthy. How is that new ankle going to hold up? Is he going to be the same player not playing for the last, what, 18 months, last 16 months, not having a full season? How is he going to recover? Is he going to not skip a beat and be the same player we saw back in 2017-2018 season? But I think there's value in him too. I don't think you're going to get a ton, but I think teams would be interested, especially competing playoff teams, looking for a guy that can come in and be a three-point shooter off your bench, be a reliable young rotation player. And he's a relatively cheap player at this point too in his career.
Are you thinking about using the stretch provision on a guy like a Cristiano Felicio just to get that bad taste out of your mouth?
This one's tough. I would say no at this point. You've already paid him. You've already paid him 2 years out of the other 2 years that you owe him. So at this point, I think I would let it go. And it's really In the grand scheme of things, if you're just looking at the contract, it's not that big of a deal. But if you think about the production that he's had for the Bulls, it's been awful, and it probably is one of the worst contracts out there. I wouldn't stretch him. I don't think it's worth it at this point, especially if you're going to keep Otto Porter on the roster and you're not going to really legitimately open up all of your cap space to chase a big-time free agent, or if you're going to make one of those moves. Now, if you're talking about Zion Williamson coming in, you're going to move Otto Porter off the team, try to open up some of that cap space, then maybe you do in order to sign somebody that you think can fit and you really want to accelerate this thing. But at this point, I think just paying him out, just pay him next year, pay him the year after that, and let him go. And maybe you can even attach him in a salary dump if that's a trade that you're looking for. But I wouldn't hold out too much hope for that. But I would pay him at this point.
You know, you bring up something interesting, and I kind of want to transition into that as we go into like the free agency period of the offseason. So if you did get Zion Williamson, would you be trying to fill your point guard void with a superstar? Like, I'll throw a name out here, Kyrie Irving, and trying to trade away a piece like Otto Porter so that you can open up that cap space. Is that something that you would try and do right now, riding the Zion wave?
I think it's exactly what you should be doing. It's exactly what the Bulls should be doing. Like, Otto Porter Jr. outside, and this is what I was trying to express to some Bulls fans that maybe kind of are still on the fence about Otto Porter Jr. and what he can be for this team. Separate yourself from the money for a minute and just look at his production overall. I think Otto Porter has been one of the most underrated players in the NBA. You look at his usage, you look at the minutes he spent, the field goal percentage, the effective field goal percentage, the true shooting percentage, the impact that he has on the floor is undervalued. So I think there's a lot of competitive teams out there that would be willing to take a chance on him. It's just about, what are you going to get back? How quickly can you get the money? How quickly can you get off the money that you're getting back from his contract? And does that set you up to be able to sign a big-time free agent, or does that set you up to be able to go and make another move and trade for a big-time point guard? So I think if Zion Williamson, though, is drafted, you definitely have to be as active as possible to try and maybe move Otto Porter and open up some of that cap space. And also, too, allowing Zion Williamson to start right away. Like, yeah, you want him to get as many minutes as possible with that young core.
So what are some players that you would, and again, it's a lot of this is hypothetical, but it's part of the game here. What are some players that you would be trying to target, whether it would be the trade market or in that free agency period, that, you know, would fill that void, that would be superstar caliber and could play with Zion, Lowry?
I think if you're looking at free agency, and Kemba Walker wants out of the Hornets, I don't think that relationship's going to last in Charlotte. I'd be very surprised if he goes back. If he does, good for him. He'll be a Hall of Famer there. But if you get Zion Williamson, and you're talking about Zach LaVine, Lowry Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Zion Williamson, and if I'm Kemba Walker and I know he wants to win right away, and that's kind of the way he's chasing, but if you're willing to come here and look at that young core and say, you know what, maybe we can build something here, and maybe this can be a next part of my career, that might be an option. But obviously New York's going to have a ton of cap space. The Lakers are going to have some cap space too available. So maybe he'll want to go play with another established superstar. I think as far as the trade market goes, you wonder what Portland's going to do. Like, as far as their timeline, what's Portland going to do with Damian Lillard, and what's Portland going to do with CJ McCollum? Are they going to eventually break that duo up? If they do, should you pounce on one of those guys? I would love to have Damian Lillard. I think he is phenomenal. But that comes at a cost, too, of trading for him. So those are a couple guys that I think I would look around to. I don't think at this point, though, this offseason, that any big superstar free agents are going to come here, even if they do get Zion. I think that free agents still need to see 1 year of how this Bulls team develops with all the dysfunction that they've had this year.
So who would be some point guards that you would target? And again, it doesn't have to be if Zion's here or not. I think, you know, point guard's going to be a void that you'd probably want to look to fill. What would be some point guards that you'd be keying in on in trying to get your team on the right track?
I think Pat Beverly is a good one, and that's one the Bulls fans like to talk about a lot recently. Obviously, the Chicago connection, too, makes a lot of sense. It's going to be about money, though, I think, with him. I think it's going to be about playing time. You know, you have to realize, too, if you sign him, you're signing him to be a defensive player first, and he's not going to score a whole lot of points for you. So you're going to have to really rely on a lot of the production from Zach LaVine, Otto Porter, Lauri Markkanen, and that's not a bad thing either. Just know that if those guys go cold for any stretch of period, you're not going to get huge numbers from Pat Beverley. But I think he'd be a great guy to have in that locker room and a great grinder on defense, and that's what the Bulls love too historically. So he's a good one. Malcolm Brogdon's going to be really interesting, especially with the injury he's dealt with now, with the Bucks signing the huge deal that they did with Eric Bledsoe to extend him. I think he's an interesting name. I think he might price himself out of where the Bulls are at this point. Let's see, a few other guys. Adoransky, he's a restricted free agent. I would throw that one out there too. If the Wizards don't want to pay him, he might hit the market. I think he would be an incredible stopgap or a couple-year guy to get in there, and I think he's done fantastic things. I just wonder how much he's going to cost too.
So, again, like in the scenario, though, since it's you running the show, would you be willing, though, to spend, like if it were you, would you be willing to spend that money on a Malcolm Brogdon to come in and kind of be this young point guard going forward and just really another young asset that maybe you can use down the road? Would you be willing to shell out the cash for that?
I think so if you can commit and really think that him and Zach LaVine can be in a multi-ball handler system. I think that would be great. Like, a lot of Bucks fans and a lot of Bucks writers have talked about how Malcolm Brogdon actually plays better when he's off the ball, which actually is not a bad thing for the Bulls. You think about the way Zach LaVine kind of tries to command the offense, and when the Bulls have been good, they've had multiple ball handlers. So maybe a guy like that doesn't need the ball in his hands to really command things would be great. So I think it would be interesting. I don't think I would go past anything past 12 or 13 million, and he might be in the 15 million range. So I think I would be really careful to also find other holes too that you have on this team and not restrict yourself on him.
Outside point guard, what are some other ways you're trying to fill up that, especially your bench? What kind of players are you looking for? Not specific names, but types of players.
I think this offseason you got to look for a backup center. We talked about Robin Lopez really fast, but if he doesn't come back, then there's a short list of names in free agency in 2019 that you're going to have to choose from. Are you looking to bring in a veteran backup? Are you going to take a chance on a guy that's in the draft, or are you just bringing in a stopgap that can fill in the minutes? I think realistically, the Bulls should look for a guy that can play the power forward and center position, can switch between both of those. One of the names that I thought about that could be a relatively cheap option if you do go the route of, say, signing Malcolm Brogdon and you don't have a lot of cap space left, bring it back Noah Vonleh. Look, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be super explosive or anything like that, but he plays both the power forward and center position. He can play decent defense. He's going to score at times for you. He's not going to be that incredible, but he's also going to come at cost controlled. I don't think it's going to cost you a whole ton to bring him back. And even if it's just on a 1-year deal, I think shifting him between the power forward and the center position can really help a team that's looking to kind of shrink the way that they're playing. So maybe that's an option too. So definitely a guy that can switch between those two, because you look, nobody's backing up Lauri Markkanen outside of Otto Porter, and you've got Cristiano Felicio, who he's not going to get minutes next year. So you need somebody who can switch between both of those and not rely heavily on Otto Porter to have to move down to the four all the time.
You know, you brought up the need for veteran presence earlier, and that was one of the reasons you said that you would be okay bringing back Robin Lopez. If Lopez isn't an option and maybe Vonleh's priced out a little bit or maybe he signed with a different team, would you consider a guy like a Taj Gibson as a potential, stopgap veteran leader to have in your locker room? Because that seems like a guy that could play the 4 and 5 defensively.
I would love Taj Gibson back. How much is he going to cost, though? Is he willing to come back on a short-term deal, maybe a 1-year deal to just kind of test the waters again, see how this team is? And how does he compare as far as signing him to the other needs on your team? Can you get a point guard that's maybe cheaper, and maybe you get lucky and you draft Ja Morant? You know, I think that's all kind of in line with those decisions. I'd love to have Taj Gibson back. Look, he is fans love him. We love him here in Chicago. And I think he loved his time here in Chicago too. And I think he'd be a great presence for this team. So yes, fully on board with Taj Gibson. It's just, how much is he going to cost you? And you're only going to have $20 million this season roughly to spend, so it would come at a price again, but I would love to have him. I think Chicago Bulls fans would love to have him.
With the core that you're building here, are you trying to also add some key shooting this offseason?
I think that's a good point too. You don't know what you're going to get from Denzel Valentine off the bench. You don't know exactly where Chandler Hutchison's going to be and how he's going to take a step in his second year. You know, we thought maybe he could knock down a few more threes than he did. And he's shown some spurts where he can make great cuts to the basket, can score, can get to the rim. It's about consistency. So I don't think it's a huge concern right now, because you do still have a lot of questions with your young players. And at that point, you want to kind of figure out what they are and what they can do and how they can contribute. So if you're adding a wing in this draft on top of Hutchison and on top of Valentine on your bench, I think you're good there. I think building a veteran, like maybe you go and call Jamal Crawford and say, hey, you know what? Are you good on the Suns for next year? Do you want to play one more year? We'd love to have you. I know his relationship with Zach LaVine has been fantastic. And honestly, any Bulls fan out there listening to this right now, go through Jamal Crawford's tweets from the last few weeks. He's the most positive guy I've ever seen. And talking about players and guys that are having good nights, guys that are getting call-ups, just guys on that Suns team that he's building up and on social media too. And he would be the perfect guy, I think, at a cheap cost too, to just be a 13th, 14th spot and be that veteran role. So I'd go after him maybe.
That's an interesting name. You know, I don't know why I never really thought of that. And I think it would be a great fit. And actually, if you're a good team and you know, you're kind of in that mold of getting to, you know, playoffs, he might actually be able to help you in a pinch too, because he can still get his shots and score in bunches if you need him to.
Him and Zach LaVine have a really good relationship too. They're both Seattle guys. Mm-hmm. And look, Jamal Crawford too started with this Bulls team. So maybe it's a circle of NBA life type of thing, is where you come back and kind of join this team. I think finding guys that have relationships with LaVine and even small relationships with Markkanen and some of the other guys that are going to be on here on this team, and even Otto Porter Jr., find those guys, find out the intel from those guys and who they like, and start to bring those guys in. And I think Jamal Crawford would be great for a lot of young guys, shooting guards, point guards, and just veteran presence in general.
So after this offseason, like based on the moves that you talked about, how many wins do you think that roster in just 2020 could get?
Let's see. So let's say for instance that we saw Patrick Beverley. He's going to be your starting point guard. You draft Jarrett Culver or RJ Barrett. That's one of the wings that you have. Zach LaVine's in your starting lineup. You still have Otto Porter Jr. Still got Lauri Markkanen. And you make a couple other moves. Maybe you bring Robin Lopez back. Maybe you just fill in a stopgap center in the back. I think that team is good enough staying fully healthy next season to really make a push to what we maybe thought they were going to be this year, 35 wins. I projected the Bulls to be 35-win type of team this year. That obviously didn't work out with all the injuries, but I legitimately think that they can be a 35 to 38-win team if they add some of these pieces like we're talking about and really take some of that developmental steps next year and stay healthy. Stay healthy, I think, is the biggest key of this all. They do that, they could be a 35, 38-win team. They don't stay healthy, I think you're back hanging around 27 to 30 wins, and it's going to be frustrating again.
If it's Zion or Ja, does that change anything in terms of the win total?
That's really interesting. I think if you get Zion or Ja Morant, you could be talking about a fringe playoff team at this point. Because you think about some of the other Eastern Conference teams that are going to be there. Like, are the Hornets going to be a contender if they don't retain Kemba? Are they going to be a contender for that 8 seed or that 7 seed? Probably not. The Nets are going to be pretty good next year. The Pistons will probably still be pretty good. Are the Heat going to be – are they still going to contend for a 7th, 8th, 6th seed? Are you just as good as them? Can you develop into being just as good as some of those other teams that are on the fringe? The Orlando Magic too. So I think you add Zion, Ja, you could be right in that conversation if you stay healthy and all these guys continue to click the way that they did maybe in February.
As the season, you know, progresses and you start looking then at a real big picture to get more of a long-term view of all this, who are some guys that might be part of your core now that you might have in your back pocket as guys that you would dangle if that disgruntled superstar becomes available on the trade market?
I think I start with Wendell Carter Jr. I think he's going to have the most upside as far as value in terms of return. If you're looking for a superstar, people still take a chance on him because even after next year, what, he'll be just turning 20 years old. there's a lot of – I have a lot of questions, and I think he's a great defensive player. He did things for the Bulls in 2.5 months with that roster that are unbelievable for an 18- or 19-year-old player to come in and do. But I – as far as if you want to add a superstar right now, I think dangling him would be the number one option if you want to keep Lowry. In my opinion, I want to keep Lowry. So I think Wendell Carter Jr. would be on the table. And as much as it hurts me to say this, maybe Zach LaVine even. You know, the contract that he's on, the production that he's had in the career year this year, I think his value is pretty high across the league. And so maybe that's a guy that you look to move if a team is looking to not fully tear down and rebuild, but kind of shift their focus, accelerate their rebuild, and kind of hit a restart button. So Zach LaVine might be a guy out there too. And hey, maybe he gets disgruntled too. Maybe things don't go the way he wants and he wants out too. So how can you turn that into a positive and maybe trade him away? All those options, but I think I would start with Carter and LaVine as being two potential options. And then Otto Porter Jr. too. I think that's clear cut. It would just be about matching salaries at this point.
So, I mean, we brought up Anthony Davis and you brought up Damian Lillard. And actually, that's always been a guy that I think doesn't get enough. I don't think enough people talk about the fact that he could be that next disgruntled guy on the market. What are some other names, though, or who are some other names that you think could pop up within the next year or two that we might say, hey, let's make a run at that guy, or that you would be targeting?
Trying to think of teams that are fringe, kind of disgruntled at this point. It seems like the Grizzlies are going to keep Mike Conley around. I think at this point, unless they get some kind of crazy package for him, that he seems like the guy that's going to stay. A lot of people talked about here, too. Maybe he's that veteran type of point guard that you need to accelerate this rebuild. I don't know about him with all the injuries.
And the age, too. He's already, what, 31?
Yeah, the age, too, is a huge factor. And, too, he's got money, too, still attached.
A lot of money.
Bradley Beal is one really interesting name. It's all going to depend on whether or not he gets named to an all-NBA team. Are the Wizards going to pay him that supermax he's going to be owed? And look, the supermax they gave out the first time to John Wall hasn't worked out really well for them. How are they going to approach that? And I know losing Bradley Beal for them would be like a complete restart, but maybe you look at them as a part of a deal. Do you really like Bradley Beal? And he's only 25, too. So maybe that's an angle that you look at and say, hey, if the Wizards don't want to pay him a supermax, we need a star here in Chicago. Maybe that's a guy that you look at and say, I'll take a gamble on Bradley Beal. It's just about cost, too. So those two guys, I think.
I'm going to throw a crazy hypothetical at you. If, let's say, 2 years from now, because really, again, like part of your rebuilding strategy is to always, you know, be ready to pounce. And let's say 2 years from now, things in Milwaukee have kind of soured a bit. Do you think that Giannis could eventually start getting a little miffed if they're not contending for a championship 2 years from now?
That's interesting.
Because it seems too good to be true. I'm just going to say, like, he kind of, the fact that he's so in love with Milwaukee and all that stuff, it's nice, but what if things don't go well? Like, I do wonder what could happen in a market like that, because I feel like that's always been the problem up there, is after time when they do have a star player, they just kind of get uneasy.
Yeah, and I think Milwaukee's tried to do their best with attracting Giannis to stay and stay there long term, like building that new arena that they have, which is absolutely incredible. I think has really revitalized their basketball fandom there. And look, they are in a small market. I think the fact that the Bulls have been bad has really helped them too. It's kind of like nobody here in the Midwest is all that great in centering around here. The Pistons have kind of middled a little bit. The Pacers have been up and down. So as far as the Midwest goes, I think the biggest team right now and the biggest focus has been on the Bucks. And, you know, listening to what Giannis has said about the community and the way that they've brought him in and kind of shifted their focus onto him. And you think about it, too. They took Jabari Parker, and Jabari Parker was supposed to be the savior of that Bucks team. And then they shifted their focus to Giannis. So how does that make him feel? You know, how does that make Giannis feel as far as, you guys really felt like I was the player of the future and the brand and the face of this future. And now I'm kind of existing as that. So I think that all plays into a factor. It does make it interesting, though, for some of the other pieces around him. If he says, you know what, this team isn't getting it done, we need to start moving some of these other guys and getting star talent in here. Now, that could make things interesting. Chris Middleton maybe be getting moved, Eric Bledsoe getting moved, some of those other pieces that they have around them. Maybe that's the route that Giannis gets traded, but I don't see him getting moved. And if he does, wouldn't you hit free agency before signing like an extension or anything like that? Because then you could end up like Anthony Davis, where it could be a mess.
True, and like I'm throwing it out there as a potential scenario where Giannis gets disgruntled and forces his way out. And I know
that would be interesting, you know, though. Where would he go, and how much would he command is the real question. How much would a team command for him? What would be the asking price for him from the Bucks? Like multiple first-round picks, probably two stars. If not, like two ready-made young stars on top of like multiple first-round picks unprotected. I think that's probably where it starts, right?
So if that was the case, though, like let's say it was a rich offer. And again, like Giannis I'm using just as kind of that hypothetical, right, of a real, you know, big fish star free agent or star player, I should say.
Sure.
So, you know, if that was the case, like if he were to get disgruntled and he wants out of Milwaukee because things just haven't gone well, are you making that kind of a trade, though, where you are giving up multiple first round picks? Maybe you have to part with a Lauri Markkanen or, you know, player X, Y, or Z. Are you doing the full boat package to bring in that star?
Absolutely. If Giannis wants to come to the Chicago Bulls, then I've got to give up, say, two first-round picks, unprotected, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., or Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, plus, I'm in. Like, if Giannis is going to sign an extension with his Bulls team, I think that would be incredible. And how many opportunities do you get to really attract a top five player in the league, right? And that's when we've all been asking for since Michael Jordan left. And since Derrick Rose had his injuries, we thought he was going to be that, and he was ready to be that, and the unfortunate injuries happened. So I think Bulls fans have been so desperate for a superstar to stay here and be the foundation that I would definitely look to do something like that. If it's not for Giannis, it would be for another top five, top 10, top 12 type of player.
And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about earlier was, you know, trying to move, like we were talking about Dunn and Denzel in terms of just trying to climb up some type of assets. Are there other players on the Bulls? You know, we even said it with Otto Porter, too, that you would consider maybe dealing a little early to get draft capital, because it seems like draft capital is a big thing when it comes to these trades for superstars.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing is like, what can Dunn command you? Like we talked about probably a second round pick at this point. What can Denzel Valentine command you? If he comes back and doesn't skip a beat, maybe you're talking about a multiple second round picks, maybe even a heavily protected way out in the future first round pick just because of the cost. You know, if a team is in a crunch budget and they need to just move for a player that can be productive without going massively over their cap, that could be something you look at too. We can circle even back to Wendell Carter Jr. too. If there's a move that you want to make and you've got to get it done and you really like a player, not even in just in 2019's draft, but in 2020, if there's somebody that you've fallen in love with, maybe he's a piece too, as far as dangling out there and saying, you know what, we liked him. We think he still can be a great player, but I think this move will make us even better in where we want to go.
I think there are a lot of those kind of scenarios when you start really thinking of you know, these rebuilds to get you back into that championship contention that, you know, you got to think 2-3 years out and start looking at how can you just keep getting assets that are, you know, younger. You know, Wendell Carter is a very young piece, and I think he's really an intriguing asset. And that's somebody that I definitely could see, you know, getting you a pretty good return. So I think that would be an interesting table setter. So what would be your target date? I shouldn't say date, target year for winning a championship?
I think right now with the roster that the Bulls have currently constructed, plus all of the moves that I would make to clean up the front office, clean up the GM role, clean up the coaching staff, try to get this revitalized. If we're talking about setting a date for playoffs, setting a date for contention in the East, and then setting a date for ultimately where you want to be contending for a finals, I would say this is going to take probably another two seasons, if not longer, probably three seasons. I would set probably the 2021-22 season as really where you should pinpoint that as if the Bulls aren't a team that are talked about as the top five team in the East, then there's a serious problem going on with this rebuild, because then you've spent 5 years and you're off the Otto Porter money, you're off the Cristiano Felicio money, you've had multiple lottery picks, you've got three guys that you feel like can be a part of a really good team going forward. If you're not talking about a top four, top five team at that point, then there's some serious concerns about where this rebuild is going. So I think 2021-22 season, with all the moves being made in between there, would be really realistically where I would set for the Bulls being a top four, top five team.
The window, I think, is always so – it's always arbitrary. And I think fans can get really caught up in it. I think if you're transparent early on that it's going to take time. I make a comparison a lot. I'm a Cubs fan. Is the way that Theo Epstein, when he came in, set the tone saying, this is going to take at least 3, 4, 5 years before we actually get to the mountaintop. And what it did is it helped buy him time. And I noticed, like, when we first were talking about, you know, the organizational philosophies and moves to be made early on, you even said that you would make it known to fans this is going to take time to get to that point.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. And I think being transparent and honest with your fans, too, is where I would start to try to build that relationship back, you know, bringing in all these new staff members and all the new GMs and stepping into a new role and kind of cleaning up everything that Bulls fans have been disgruntled and just kind of been apathetic about for the last handful of years. You be real and honest with them, and mistakes are going to be made. Not every front office is perfect. Not every coaching staff is perfect. So being as transparent about where you want to be with this rebuild and how the direction is going, I think helps for fans to understand that and keep along with the path. And, you know, it's hard to set a firm deadline on any of these things. You kind of understand that from the role that that Gar Forman and John Paxson currently have to operate under. You know, they can't set a timetable on things because a season like they had just now could set things back. You know, they didn't expect Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Bobby Portis, all of these guys, Denzel Valentine, Wendell Carter Jr., Chandler Hutchison. Look at all the names that I'm naming off that didn't play full seasons. That sets a rebuild back, and as far as development time and chemistry between your players. But I think being honest about the mistakes that you make, how you're going to improve on those mistakes, and what you want to do to better yourself there, and just being transparent as possible would be a step in the right direction for me. And just saying every move that we're making is trying to get the basketball team better and on the right path. And I think fans can buy into something if they know the direction. If they don't know the direction and don't understand the direction of this team or where it's going or the philosophies or any of that, that's when people start to go, what are we doing here? I'm apathetic. I don't really care about this team at this point. I'll check back in when you guys decide to actually have a plan going forward. So I think having that relationship with the fans is huge.
Well, Jordan, I want to just say, you know, you set the bar really high here, because I think you really laid out a very well thought out plan from point A to point B to point C. So everybody else after you is really going to have to work hard to beat you on this.
I appreciate that.
Before I let you go, though, I wanted to give you a chance to let everybody know where they can find Locked On Bulls.
Yeah, so Locked On Bulls, you can find it on any podcast provider, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Google Play, Google Podcasts, any podcast provider. We drop episodes 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, throughout the season. And now going into the offseason, we're going to stay at 5 days a week. So if you're looking for that daily dose of Bulls content, whether it's breaking news, rumors, trade discussion, we're here for you. And the summer is usually a really fun time for my co-host Matt Peck and I to kind of dive into all of these rumors, dive into free agency, and also take a look back at the season that was, and also get a good reaction from our audience and keep kind of stay in tune when the summer tends to die down with the NBA. So be there 5 days a week. You can hit us up on Twitter at any time at Locked On Bulls or Jordan C. Malley.
Awesome. And, you know, we'll be sure to listen. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. I hope I set the bar high enough for the rest of your guests. And look, the plan that I have set out in front of you might not be perfect at this point, but just know that there's a lot of options out there. And the most important part is having some patience and understanding the direction and being transparent. And I think if a new GM like myself or somebody similar to me with similar characteristics can come in here and do that, think the Bulls will be on the right path.
Sure as hell hope so. All right, Jordan, take care.
Thanks, I appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. For the latest updates, visit us on Twitter at rebuild_a_bowl. You can find our podcasts on Spotify, iTunes, and on rebuildable.com.